comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hello, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful, beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. You know, I'm here because it matters, and you matter. And I'm delighted you're here. Have you taken a look at the vlog today? The vlog is what the... I call it video blog, but on the internet they are called vlogs. Have you seen it? You need to check it every day. All right, make sure you do. Well, last night, Jose Escamilla was here, and Jose Escamilla, boy, you talk about hit a home run. He hit several home runs last night, and it was my pleasure to have him on the show, and it was my pleasure to get to talk with him after the show. And folks, let me tell you what he's offered to do. On November 21st, that's a Saturday, he's going to appear in a live video chat with our members in the members area. And he's going to share with you a few minutes, not just the trailer, but a few minutes of Luna, the movie. You will be the first audience to see that. And so you, you know, if you're a member, then that's it. You're in, and you get to attend that. So we'll do that on a Saturday, and it'll be at Showtime, whatever time it is right now where you are. That's Showtime, and you'll get to see Jose talking with us live. We're going to activate a video chat for that, and so you'll be able to chat with him as well. And then, in addition to that, he's going to show several minutes of Luna. Now, I think you saw from the trailers that this is a dynamite, and I mean dynamite, presentation. And so you're going to get to enjoy that. Now, if you're not a member, click over there where it says Become a Member on the menu on the left side of the webpage at kevinsmithshow.com. Just click on that, become a member, and you're in. And you'll get to be a part of that. I think that's going to be pretty exciting. After we saw what we saw in the trailers, I'm really, really looking forward to seeing what's in the several minutes of Luna. You know, I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I really am anticipating it. And I think it's going to be exciting. All right. K-Files e-zine. Tomorrow we will reactivate the page where you can subscribe. All the important moves we make, all the important news about the show is in the K-Files e-zine. It's our free weekly newsletter. Truly free. We don't, there are no strings attached. You don't have to do anything other than just subscribe and then confirm your subscription. And that's it. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Even those folks who jumped off the ship when they heard video was going into the members area, you can resubscribe. It's free. And you can do it starting tomorrow. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you.
have heard, all of us have heard or read about ancient tales of an ancient cosmic war of unimaginable proportions. Ancient writings tell of a great war of the gods. The Bible speaks of a massive war in the heavens. And we've had guests on this show that have spoken about it. And tonight, Ted Tweetmeyer returns to the Kevin Smith Show to talk about visible evidence, possibly of that ancient cosmic war. Ted is an electrical engineer, and among other things, he's been project manager on some projects at NASA. But when you see them launch, you're watching his handiwork. Ted Tweetmeyer, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hello, Kevin. It's great to be here.
Ted, you wrote an article. Now, there are some books that have come out about cosmic wars. In fact, there are several titles that have come out that talk about this cosmic war. And one of the things that I've said to guests when they bring that up on the show, or when that is the topic of the show, one of the things that I've brought up is the question, okay, I don't doubt that there was, but there must be physical evidence of it. And they point to various things that they say represents physical evidence of this cosmic war. Now, I read an article that you wrote some time ago where you talk about a specific type of cratering that seems to be on so many of the planets in our solar system. And then in a conversation with you, you mentioned that you think that this might be evidence of the use of a weapon of some kind. So I want us to get into that a little bit here tonight. The type of cratering that we're talking about is when we look at the planets or the moons or even asteroids and we see these hexagon-shaped craters. Now, you said something to me on the phone today that I went in search of on the internet and found you're 100% correct. The scientists say that an impact crater is always circular. Doesn't matter what the shape of the impactor is. It could be shaped like a gnarled zigzag of stone. But on impact, it creates a circular crater. And yet, we see these hexagonal craters all over the moon. We see them on Mars. We see them on Venus and Mercury. And, they're all over the place. So let's start with that and take us on the journey. Explain to us what caught your attention about this, and then what your theory is, and then we'll talk about why that's your theory.
Okay, well, it began with some observations, mainly around Mars and Iapetus, and I noticed these structures, these craters, had typically five or six sides. Usually I think they were six. And I thought, well, this is kind of strange. You know, how could we have a non-circular crater from an impactor, which almost certainly wasn't hexagonal shaped, and as you pointed out, would it really make any difference even if it was? So the question is, what could have carved out these shapes? You know, from where do they come from, and how is this possible? And is this unique to only one particular planet or heavenly body? And it, of course, turns out it's not. And, you know, the one you're circling on the screen there, Iapetus, is an excellent example. And you may recognize that particular moon is looking very much like the Star Wars Death Star. But, of course, nobody had any pictures of this moon when the original Star Wars was made. You know, that it, there weren't any. In another, I mean, the interesting thing about this, and here we can see there's something in the center, dead center in this thing, and yet we can see the straight walls. It looks, appears to be six of those, pretty much all of equal length, that are in the periphery of that impact site. And, you know, we hear how our system was pummeled by endless meteors. Now, if you look up at the top, it's great you put that graphic up there, Kevin, because right under the H of Smith in your name, there's another one. Right up there at the very top, right below the H, you can see another straight lines, set of straight lines around an impact site. So, you know, just a little lower. right between the two lines of text, you can see the thing right there.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, but, and there are others, of course, on this same one. And the question is, of course, how could this be and why? And, you know, we used to think of Mercury, for example, as a basically barren planet, you know, nothing there, just a big ball of rock, and yet spacecraft have taken pictures of it and found, again, more of these polygon shapes on that planet. And there is no explanation for why they have this shape. Now, from everything I know, NASA's been quite silent about it. They are on so many other things. So it is a bit of an enigma.
Well, one in after we talked today, I went searching for information about this. And actually, while I had you on the phone, I had started searching and found a statement that no experiments had ever produced anything but a circular crater from impact. All experiments that have been done for impact produce a circular crater. And it doesn't matter what shape you use for the impactor. It causes, the physics of the impact causes a circular crater. It does not cause this multi-sided crater. And I found that on several sites, including scientific sites. And yet we see these craters. So when they tell us that, Ted, that all impacts create a circular crater, and then we see that there are these, well, in this case, sexagonal craters with six sides. When we see that, then what they're telling us is that's not an impact crater. Am I correct, or am I misreading this?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a complete contradiction there. In fact, there's even been documentaries on TV that have shown, you know, they have a pan of sand in the bottom of a big thick plastic cylinder, you know, and they project a projectile down into it. Now comes a perfectly round crater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no evidence of any straight sides. So now this, of course, leads us to say, what else could have caused these? What else could have formed these craters, and how could this have happened? What type of a method or other means was used to create these? Are they artificial?
Well, yeah, because if all experiments have shown that impacts create circular craters, and then I look at this and it's not circular, then I have to assume it was not caused by an impact. It's not an impact crater. It's something else. So what could cause this?
Yeah, and the one possibility, although some may chuckle at this, but we're finding that more and more things that appeared to be impossible are now turning into the realm of reality. And as we'll, you and I will talk about the moon here in a little while, one possibility is some type of a weapon used to possibly eradicate anything on the surface of a given heavenly body. And we're talking about a technology that's a staggering number of years ahead of ours, because it would predate life on Earth. You know, it would be from a race that we know really nothing about. And it really could put a whole new spin on what we think the origins of the solar system are, how alone we are, and many other things.
Well, I don't know. I didn't look up the statistics, the figures on the Iapetus, but let me put that graphic back on the screen. This sexagonal or six-sided crater. By the way, you're right. It looks very much like the Death Star in Star Wars. But this six-sided crater takes up a whole lot of the geography of Iapetus. It's huge. And Iapetus, although compared to other heavenly bodies, may be rather small, still, this is a very large crater. So if we're talking about something, a weapon causing this, we're talking about one whale of a weapon, Ted. We're talking about something that's gigantic.
Well, it could be a beam of energy that's focusable. You know, just as we focus lasers, whatever this was may also have a variable beam diameter that they could control mm-hmm. to create this kind of damage. And the amount of energy involved is quite mind-boggling. You know, it's way up in the terawatts. I mean, it's a gigantic amount of energy that's spread over miles.
Ted, do we have anything on Earth right at this time capable of generating that kind of energy?
Well, as far as I know, a laser is probably the closest thing, but that type of beam diameter, no, nothing close to that. You know, we can generate, you know, large amounts of megawatts, and I guess even for very brief periods of time, a terawatt of power. But we're talking a beam diameter 6 to maybe 12 inches in diameter at the most. So if you focus that beam out, then, of course, you cut down the number of watts per centimeter, or what you might just simply look at as energy density,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a given area. So, I mean, even if you took a terawatt beam, you spread it out over miles, you probably couldn't do this kind of damage. It takes that kind of energy to just knock out a missile a couple hundred miles away from an airplane. And it's a massive laser that does this. So, we certainly don't have anything close to this.
All right. I'm going to refer to a photograph that was in your article. And in this one, we can see, for folks that are listening by radio, we can see a number of craters here, a big central crater that apparently is about 50 kilometers wide. Then there are some other craters around it, and some other features around it that you've marked in another photograph that we'll take a look at in a moment. But first, Ted, where is this photograph? What heavenly body is this found on?
Is this the... I know the photos of Moon and Mercury actually look quite a lot alike. Off the top of my head, I imagine it's one of the two. Can you help me out a little there?
I have no idea. It was in your article, and it's the one where you've sketched the all the sides around the craters. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 craters marked.
Yeah, this. I'm sorry, it just escapes me right at the moment. And it should have been marked. I'm sorry that the caption was missing. But it was taken from a NASA satellite photo, so it's extremely legitimate. And well, other than the red marking, it's unenhanced. I mean, that's just as it was.
Well, we'll take a look at it unenhanced.
Okay.
And now, the interesting thing to me about this is what we're looking at here is a large sexagonal crater, once again. And then there are other craters around it, sexagonal, but they're smaller. And that's interesting to me. That's very interesting to me. I mean, what is this like a shotgun beam that hits and you have one central point and then other little pellets of plasma hit it, or what?
Well, you know, this is a really good example you put up. If we look at the upper left corner, okay, we can see kind of a dark circular area. Now, that may have been an actual real crater. It encompasses, excuse me, the small one on the left edge, as well as, you know, half of the other one. Now, it looks pretty clear that predated these events that created these craters, because the one at the topmost of the image, you know, is clearly on top of, so to speak, the one that was there already.
Yeah.
So here we can see a great comparison of a possible impact versus, you know, these other methods that were used. The other interesting thing is that, and you notice the size, you know, these things, or if we use this this marker at the bottom of 50 kilometers, we could see that the one in the center is at least that wide.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps maybe 60, and the others are probably roughly 25 kilometers. That's really large.
Yeah, it is.
Another thing we see in this picture, we see that those four are almost equidistantly spaced, very neatly spaced apart. And the larger one in the center is slightly off-center. But if you look at the other...
Ted, we have to step away for a break. We'll pick up there when we come back. Folks, don't go away. More with Ted Tweetmeyer right after this. You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening is Ted Tweetmeyer. Ted, we were discussing this series of craters, this bunch of craters in the photograph, when we had to go to break, and I had to cut you off in mid-sentence. So I want to give you the opportunity to finish your thought there before we move on.
Okay.
You were talking about these four are pretty much equidistant, and then the one in the center is a little bit off-center.
Right. And all of these seem to share six sides. You know, it seems to be apparent. What we don't see is an evidence of an impact object, really, in really any of these. You know, we don't see a central depression or what have you. So if there was dust or whatever, it would have covered it over. But as we've talked about earlier, there isn't any known natural process that would create polygon-shaped craters on moons and planets that we have in such abundance in our solar system.
So you think that this is some type of a beam weapon that was used, Now, we were talking about that over great distances, you would get basically dissipation of density of that beam. So how close would this weapon have had to have been to this body to have caused this?
Yeah, let me clarify that statement. A collimated beam, such as a laser, will retain most of its energy. But if you take a given amount of energy and you defocus it or use some means to spread it out, then yes, it would be less. The question of distance is almost a question of energy, and whether or not whatever was used has an energy which, like radio waves or magnetic fields, falls off the square of the distance. You know, that we don't really know what they used.
So would this indicate to you, possibly, let's assume, I know this is a theory, but let's assume that it's a fact for a moment, and let me ask a question about it. So let's assume it's a fact that these are scars of a cosmic war, and that these are, these multi-sided craters have been caused by some type of a beam weapon. The fact that we see it as in the faceplate for the show on Iapetus, we'll just take that as an example. Would that indicate to you that there was some population living there at some time?
Well, there are different possibilities. That maybe a base was there. It may be a military or some strategic importance why these things happened. And, you know, you bring up a great point there, because there had to be a reason why these particular areas were targeted and the reason for it. And, you know, for someone to go to that much trouble to do this eradication.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, this is almost an ideal weapon system, because if it is some type of non-radioactive type energy, electromagnetic of some part of the spectrum or some other form, it could annihilate whatever was there and leave the planet or moon usable for someone else. It's almost an ideal type of technology as a weapon.
Well,
that way.
Yeah, but the thing is, it would appear anyway that the planets were not left usable. For instance, let's take Mars. What NASA is telling us, of course, I take a lot of issue with a lot of things NASA says about Mars.
Yeah.
And you and I have done shows on that. But let's just take what they say at face value. Here's what they say. They say that Mars was at one time very Earth-like, had a very Earth-like atmosphere and climate. It had oceans and lakes, and which, of course, means there were also rivers. They say we're looking for signs that there may have been life there. Now, I contend they have found life there, but perhaps they have not. I could be wrong. I was once or twice. So maybe they have not. But let's assume that that's correct, that Mars was one time very Earth-like. Today it is very not Earth-like. Well, it's got some similarities, but I mean, there are no oceans that we know of. There are no lakes that NASA admits, although there's some in their photographs. And they say it's a dead, dry, barren planet. It is obviously very different than once it was. And it has these multi-sided, or as you say, poly-sided, craters all over it. So if we take what they say and we take what you say and we say it's not a theory, it's a fact, then Mars has been hit with this weapon and it has apparently left it unusable.
Yeah, that would make sense. Although we don't know what other processes have taken place there or other events, but the evidence that these formations exist on that planet do tend to indicate that some technology like this that shows up as evidence on these other bodies in our solar system also took place there. So the question is, of course, who, what, and why, when. Of course, we know that that had to be a very, very long time ago.
Now, Iapetus is a moon of what? Saturn or Jupiter? It's Saturn, isn't it?
That is a an interesting moon, the third largest moon of Saturn, actually.
It's and got this. Actually, it's got this ridge around its equator, all the way around.
Yeah, the Iapetus, which you featured there in your graphic, has a ridge you can't quite see in that picture, but mm-hmm. it's approximately 20 kilometers wide and 13 kilometers high, and almost 1,300 kilometers long, according to JPL.
It you know what it looks like? It looks like...
like somebody injection molded it.
Yeah, well, that or like when you weld two halves of a sphere together, if it's made of metal. And you've got two halves of a sphere, and you weld it. You get that bead around where you weld it.
Yeah, I mean, it's conceivable that, you know, that there's races out in the universe that making planets is nothing. You know, they churn those out like we churn out Christmas ornaments to hang on trees, just a bigger scale.
Now, another part of your theory, or maybe it's just a separate theory, but we talked about it somewhat today, is that at least some of the planets in our solar system may, and moons, may have been brought here. In other words, they didn't form here. They may have been actually towed into place.
Yeah, that's right. And there was a couple Greek historians that... I have to dig up the reference to that, but wrote about when the moon came into orbit, which I thought was absolutely fascinating, you know, that this was put there, shall we say, by beings unknown. But we know the moon is a stabilizer. You know, they've done simulations in supercomputers of the Earth. We know the exact shape of the Earth. It's a little egg-shaped. And they've done rotational simulations of it and found that without the moon exactly where it sits, the Earth would be unstable. So it may have been added because of stability issues that were happening, you know, a very long time ago.
You know, when you go and when you take your car in to get your wheels balanced, what they do is any place where it is out of balance, directly across the wheel from that, they add weight as a counterbalance.
And, yes, and it's so not much weight compared to the weight of the tire either.
That's true. And so what you're suggesting is that our tire was out of round here and it was out of balance, and that whoever put this moon out there exactly where it is as a balance to stabilize the Earth's rotation.
Well, that's, you know, I think that's one of its functions, and of course we know the tides are connected to it, so the oceans would be pretty quiet places without the moon working on them, along with many of the other complexities of Earth's weather and so forth. And so, yeah, it serves an important function in that respect. We do know that, but there's quite a mystery as to how it actually got there. You know, they've done simulations. Well, it was ejected from the Earth. Well, okay. If something really, really big hit the Earth, and a chunk of rock 2,000 miles across was ejected, you would think there'd be a pretty darn big hole in the Earth somewhere. Now, that was done when it was molten. Yeah, okay. Then how did the moon take on such a virtually perfect orbit? Why is it the moon happens to have the same, almost exactly the same apparent size as the sun, 93 million miles away, and the moon is between 250,000 and 350,000 miles in its orbit? You know, and the moon can eclipse the sun perfectly. There are too many things that indicate this was engineered to be there for a reason. And the moon, of course, we know from the craters on it, has taken one heck of a pounding in its history, whether that history was all in our orbit or someplace else. You know, there's nothing that says that technology doesn't exist that can move these objects around, like billiard balls, you know? It's hard for us to comprehend it, but it doesn't mean it isn't possible. It doesn't mean that. And that's where you have to make not a leap of faith, but anyway, open one's mind to the consideration that there could very well be races that engineer solar systems, including ours. They build the whole thing.
Well, that certainly would qualify them for what the Greeks called them, gods.
Sure.
Now, you know, the Greeks wrote about this great war of the gods. The Sumerians wrote about it. The peoples of ancient India wrote about it. There is a reference in the Bible to this great war in heaven. So you may be onto something here. All right, we have to take a break. We're going to step away for a couple of minutes. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Ted Tweetmeyer. He is an electrical engineer, and every time you watch something launch down at Cape Canaveral, you're getting to watch the results of some of his handiwork. Ted, we were talking about the moon, and we were talking about the possibility that the moon did not even originate in this solar system, and that it was brought to its current location. I've heard that about the Earth as well. There are rocks on the moon that have been dated older than the Earth.
And what that does is destroys that whole theory that the moon's a result of an impact with the Earth. You know, it certainly can't be older than the Earth if it came from the Earth, right?
You would think so, yeah.
So,
well, then there's this too, Ted.
I'm sorry?
There's also this. In one of the Apollo missions, they set up some seismic sensors. I think that was Apollo 14, but maybe not. But they set up some seismic sensors on the surface of the moon.
Oh, yeah.
And then they crashed part of the craft back down onto the moon after they took off.
Yeah, I can explain that if you'd like.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, the lunar lander consisted of two components, the base part of it, or the descent stage, and the the lander part that held the two astronauts, the ascent stage, and it had enough fuel to land, but it would not have enough fuel to take both off. So just before takeoff, the two were separated, and the descent stage acted like a launch platform, and just the irregular shaped lunar module, if you will, took off to go back into orbit to rendezvous with the command module. It rendezvoused, they docked, transferred all the samples, pictures, and so forth through the hatch, and then they jettisoned the lunar module, which fell back to the moon. And they did this for all the missions from Apollo 11 on up. So,
well, the scientists that were listening, if you will, to those seismic instruments said the moon rang, I think in one case they said 45 minutes, in another case they said it rang for hours, as if it were hollow.
And it could be. It very well could be.
So do you think that if it is hollow, that it would be an occupied spaceship?
There are most definitely bases there. There are, you know, we've had technology to take us out of the atmosphere since the days of Hitler. We've had that technology. They developed the first gravitic drives, and that was 70 years ago. So you can just imagine how advanced it's become. And many of the things people see are actually ours. We made them. But NASA doesn't get to play with the really nice toys in the sandbox. The other children don't allow it.
No.
So they have to keep launching rockets. Well, the Navy and the Air Force have much more sophisticated spacecraft like the TR-3 and others. Now,
we hear about the TR-3B. What is that?
TR-3B, its initial design was a 60-foot diameter toroidal ring, what you might just call a donut, in the center of the vehicle. It's powered by three nuclear reactors. I expect it can stay in the air with probably even one or two of them, because they don't want it to come down. It spun a high-density mercury vapor at high velocity in the middle to reduce the vehicle's weight. And there were three, originally there were three what they call multi-function thrusters in the corners. It's gone through quite an evolution since then now.
Well, now, wait a minute. If it's like a donut, how does it have corners?
Well, I mean, inside, okay, inside the triangular vehicle, which was about the size of a football field, was this donut ring in the center.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I uncovered in NASA's archives such a structure. It shows some men and women working around it in some 60s clothing, working around a ring about that size and description, sitting there. They took a picture from overhead. I mean, these things are out there, you know. It just mm-hmm. takes a lot of digging to find them.
So what are the capabilities of this TR-3B?
Well, it you might say it nullifies mass in a way. So it can move almost silently. It will cause, if it goes over homes, it does vibrate windows. There are some very low frequency emanations that come from it. And windows will kind of rattle in China, and you hear this kind of a whoom, 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 whoom kind of a sound if you're underneath it. And it's painted black, so you don't see it. It rarely flies during the day. And it could easily leave, you know, the atmosphere. And that's, of course, just one of many different types of vehicles that have been built. So these things...
Now, are these manned or are they unmanned?
They're manned with a small crew.
Mm-hmm.
was it, a crew of three or four, I believe. Not very many. Didn't take much. And
why is it so big then? If there's only three or four people on board, why a craft so large?
Well, the thing is, with a nuclear reactor, you need a lot of shielding, and shielding is heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you need a certain amount of mass, you know, of uranium isotope to create, you know, it takes a minimal amount of it to create enough heat to generate the power. So, you know, you're kind of faced with a scale factor. You know, you have to start with what you have and then build around it. You know,
so really then the only space you have left after you build the machine, you just have enough space for three or four people.
Well, unless you build the machine bigger.
Yeah.
You know, it's
okay, now this craft would to the unwashed masses would appear to be anti-gravity. Is that how we would usually describe it?
Well, that's a term that is often avoided, but
that when we talk about anti-gravity, we the unwashed masses, we look at the TR-3B, we would describe it that way, right?
Yeah, you can think of it as counteracting the force of gravity.
Okay, can this thing fly to the moon?
It conceivably could. You know, if you can, I mean, some of the disc-shaped craft, for example, and we have some of those in the inventory, but you know, they work on changing the force of gravity around them, and then they can also, well, it's a whole different story, but I mean, they can create a warp to a distant point and get there very quickly.
Okay, so they would be more likely to be going back and forth to the moon than the TR-3B, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, they're faster.
All right, now you said, well, we have a break coming up here in just 7 seconds. So when we come back, I want to talk about these bases on the moon and the implications of that in light of evidence that a great beam weapon of some kind may have been used against the moon and other bodies in our solar system. So we'll do that when we come back from this. I looked at the clock wrong, so we actually have a few seconds left. So let's get into that. What you said, we have bases on the moon. How many do we have?
Well, if they are like alternative 1 and 2, but you would, if you were creating an ark for the life on Earth, mm-hmm. you would build at least 2 in case a disease wiped one out. So the 2 would be there in isolation and, in fact, might not even know of each other
mm-hmm.
intentionally. So, you know, of course, all this creates a real problem for Bible believers.
Yeah, we'll pick up right. That's a good place to take the break. The break is on, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you just now joining us in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. And my guest is Ted Tweetmeyer. Now, Ted, you dropped a bomb for us, a bombshell, right there as we went to break. You were talking about that the existence of life on the moon, and I suppose anywhere else on any other planets, would be particularly worrisome to people who have strong faith in the Bible. I want to give you a chance to expound upon that and complete that thought. I think it does for some, but certainly not for all. But I want to hear why you think that's a problem for them.
Well, it really should not be a problem for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for some reason, and it's one of those hard to define things. People are a little shocked to think there could be other life. The thing is, even though the Bible doesn't talk about it, it doesn't exclude it completely. You know, I guess if you look at it from a God standpoint, to think this is the only planet he made would almost be somewhat selfish, I would think. So, you know, but as far as the life on the moon goes, there have been photographs on the dark side taken by Apollo that found lighted areas. There mm-hmm. is something happening on the other side of the moon. And there have been photographs, even by amateur photographers, of flashes of light and other things that go on up there. So it's far from being a quiet, dead moon.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a group, I guess you could even say a category, among people who would say they are Bible believers, who steadfastly stand against the idea that there's any intelligent life anywhere else, and by the way, if there is, it's demonic and it's of the devil. Those people do exist. But what I find is that most of the Bible believers, the majority, are far more open-minded than that, and they struggle sometimes to fit it in with their church's theology, but they're far more open-minded, the majority, than that, and they try to figure out what it is within the context of the Bible, but you know they accept the fact that there are probably intelligent beings out there. One of the things that is of interest there is a statement that Jesus made, that he has other flocks you know not of. And he actually said that. He said, I have other flocks that you don't know about. So some people have taken that and said, well, okay, he's talking about other intelligent races out there. Maybe that's what he's talking about, maybe not. We'll leave that to the theologians, but it is an interesting statement. Now, let's talk about the stories that there is an alien base on the other side of the moon, and you brought up the fact that there are photographs that have been taken that show lighted areas. And last night on this show, I had Jose Escamilla. He's working on a new movie called Luna. We showed a couple of trailers from the movie, and he shows in the trailer, he shows that. One crater that is absolutely brilliantly lit and may not actually even be a crater. It may just be a sort of circular complex. Brilliantly lit. And let me ask you this now. He found color photographs with tremendous resolution and detail, color photographs of the moon, not at NASA's site, but on the USGS site. And they've been there for years, but we all keep going over to NASA to get these photographs, and we get mainly black and white. And these other photographs from the Apollo missions are in color and extreme high resolution. And, you know, we saw last night in his trailer what appears to be a gigantic statue of a humanoid figure.
Well, you remember the Clementine spacecraft
mm-hmm.
that mapped the moon, okay? Mm-hmm. I found, and it's since been removed, the pictures, the database for Clementine was at stargate.mil.gov. Isn't that a fascinating little URL?
Yes, it is.
And I was in the process of downloading and going through the pictures when one day suddenly it was gone. They took it away. So it could be the USGS got the censored images. You know, there was the couple hundred tapes from Apollo that NASA claimed they lost. And they were found at a closed McDonald's at Moffett Field, which was a kind of a decommissioned air base. And the tapes were done in the old, it was a 2-inch or 3-inch wide format, and these guys found a couple old VTRs and rebuilt them, and were in the process of putting it all on DVDs, and then we heard nothing more.
I remember that.
Yeah, I put pictures taken, pretty decent quality pictures that they took. I put them on my website and showed all these cans piled all over the place in the McDonald's. They were in the kitchen, they were in the dining area, they were all over the place. And nobody seems to know how they all got there. They just, like, showed up. A lot of them still have the original tape seals around the edges, you can see in the close-up pictures. And be pretty fascinating stuff as to what's on there. In fact, they said that it was actually pretty decent resolution that these were actually made at. But, you know, whether they're going to see the light of day, that's another story. It seems like that whole thing has suddenly disappeared off the radar map.
Yeah, I actually did a show when all of that news first came out. NASA got rid of all that equipment that can play those tapes. And there were some NASA employees that said, well, if you're just going to throw it away, can I get it? And they said, yeah. And they took it and stored it in a garage. And then when these tapes showed up, that's what they were using to rebuild a working machine. And and then you're right. The news about that just disappeared. You and I have to get our heads together on that one and see if we can track these guys down and find out what happened.
You know, the story I got was that they found a tape deck in a chicken coop and rebuilt it. Can't imagine what shape that had to be in.
Yeah, they found one that was mostly working. Most of it was working. And then there was a NASA employee that had two or three machines in a garage, and they were getting parts from those to rebuild the one from the chicken coop.
Yeah, that's what I understand. They cannibalized a lot of them to do it. Mm-hmm. I think they were all tube technology, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is they were in the process of putting them on a disc, and then we heard nothing more. And I would have thought long by now some of these would have been released. And made available.
Well, let's talk about this alien base on the other side of the moon, and then we'll open the phone lines. Do you have any information about that? Because we keep hearing about it, and we keep seeing photographs that appear to show there's something there. Do you have any information about whether or not there is an alien base on the far side of the moon?
Well, there are spacecraft that come and go from the moon. We do know that. They have been photographed by many different means, but whether or not that's completely an alien base or not, I can't say that for sure. But I'm almost pretty certain we have a couple bases there ourselves at this point in time. And if you're making an arc for the Earth, you know, that's probably not a bad place to put one. Mm-hmm. Assuming the Earth is still here. I mean, you would be able to preserve life and do kind of the Dr. Strangelove selection thing and put only the best of the best up there. So.
Okay, tell you what, let's open up the telephone lines and allow people to call in with their questions or comments. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. Now, if you happen to live outside the United States and outside of Canada, feel free, if you don't want to make that international long-distance call, feel free to go to my website, scroll down to where you see the link that says flash message and click it. You can send me a message and it'll begin to flash on my monitor over here when it comes in. All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello there, Kevin. Hello there, Ted.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm not all there, but I'm still here. Well, boy, you know, there's a lot of different theories of who's been there in the solar system and who's got bases where. Is it the Anunnaki? Is it somebody else? Is it part of the secret space program? I'm thinking that a lot of it is, you know, a mixture of a little bit of both, especially in this modern day and age. But of course, a lot of people like to research the, like, where all this stuff originates from. Like, of course, the ancient war in the heavens that, you know, we were showing evidence from on the Kevin Smith Show video feed there earlier. But I want to know, do you think that the establishment has been deliberately trying to muddy a lot of the information to try, for some reason or another, to throw people off of what the truth really is? Because you know what they say, knowledge is power, and, you know, the control of knowledge is the real power. What do you think of that, Ted?
Well, those are very good questions to bring up. And I won't do what a politician once did when he was confronted with a tough question. Said, really great question. Excellent question. Thank you for asking it. Next question, please. No, if you go back to the way back to after the Roswell thing, you know, there was, of course, the think tank report that, I believe it was Rand Corporation, said that, oh, you know, if we tell the world that there are other races and other visitors, it's going to collapse religions and society and so forth and so on. And, you know, and if you look at things like the stock market, which, you know, if some CEO is constipated, the stock drops 20%, you know, it takes so little to rattle the economic structure. You know, it's really quite amazing. So, Is there an orchestrated effort? I know from Air Force contacts and that I have that, you know, we have some manned stations up there that watch the Earth. They take off and land. You know, they're just really huge vessels. And, you know, this technology is so advanced now. And they take off and land at night. They change out the crew. They change out the food and, you know, put new food on it and so forth and water and goes back up there again. You know, we have a...
How do they keep all this secret?
Oh, well, I'll refer you to the Manhattan Project, okay? Many thousands of people worked on that thing for years and the public knew absolutely nothing about it. The Oak Ridge Boys is a group that actually entertained the Manhattan Project people. They were brought in under machine gun guard. They were never allowed any physical contact. They were brought into the stage. They performed and they left. They never got near the employees. You know, they can do this. Trust me.
You well, know, even Harry Truman did not know.
Yeah, and there are things that even the president's deemed that he doesn't have a need to know. The government has taken on a life of its own, like it has in most any other country, you know, and it even the highest people up are still considered not able to be told certain things. You know, the need to know thing. I mean, mm-hmm. I was involved in it doing DOD contracts, and Kevin knows about this stuff, that it's highly compartmentalized. And if you don't need to know, you're never going to be told, and you're never going to hear about it. And that's how they keep a lid on it. It's, you know, it's an amazing structure almost that they have put in place, but it's evolved over perhaps 100 years now into what it's turned into. So yes, they can keep it quiet, and they can put out this information. And I can honestly say I have never ever once knowingly said anything as disinformation. I don't want any part of it. I don't want to be involved in that whole game. But there are things going on. There are technologies that are extremely advanced, and when there are witnesses and things, they're either intimidated to shut up or they have bad accidents. I mean, they can keep a lid on this stuff, believe me.
Well, and they have. They've done pretty well. I think it's coming unwound on them, but they've done pretty well at keeping a lid on it. All right, let's go to the next call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin, Ted. This is Julia from Texas.
Hi, Julia.
Hello.
Hi. Well, you know, I've always thought my whole life that the moon was a ship. For example, when I heard years ago that it rang hollow, I thought, you know, it really does, maybe it really could be a ship. And then I thought, well, you know, instead of the Star Trek-like shields that they have around ships, why not bring your own? You could use your, you know, the rocks, the outside of it for raw materials and for a shield. What do you think about that, Ted?
Well, you know, it's a really great point you make, because it has a very high percentage of titanium in it. And on Earth, the biggest deposit of titanium is in Russia. So, and it has some other pretty rare things on it, too, that aren't found on Earth. And so you could very well be right. It may have functioned as a ship. In fact, you might remember there was an old Star Trek episode about a ship called Yonata.
Exactly.
And, you know, a race of people, I know you know what it is, but I'll just quickly cover it for our listeners. A race of people, you know, generation after generation, traveled inside, basically it was an asteroid. And the one cardinal rule that you couldn't break on penalty of death was, don't climb a hill and touch the sky. Of course, because if you do, you're going to find out that it's a painted ceiling. So, you know, that the fact that it could be hollow, you know, who knows? Maybe Roddenberry was onto something, and maybe he knew or didn't know it.
Right, and so another question would be that it's not only what is on the moon as far as bases go, but what is in the moon.
Yeah.
You know, like a civilization that's been there forever and ever, and that it wasn't actually towed here, it was driven here.
Ooh, that may be.
Well, that's certainly possible. Yeah, that's true.
Now, how would you, Julia?
Listen, thank you so much.
Don't go away, Julia. Got a question for you.
Oh, okay.
How old were you the first time you drove a car?
Ooh, I was 14.
Was it exciting?
It was very exciting, but I wrecked it.
Well, then it was really exciting. Okay, how would you like to get the chance to drive the moon? Wouldn't that be a kick?
I would absolutely love it.
Yeah, but you might wreck it.
Yeah.
I think it would be a little bit like piloting one of those super tankers or something. I bet it would have a little bit of a sluggish response.
Probably would. Julia, thank you for the call. Very interesting. All right. Yeah, can you imagine having to go explain, I wrecked the moon? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, this is Mike from Mississippi.
Hi, Mike.
I don't know if it was on your show or if it was somewhere else, but, you know, Richard Hogan has been talking about that the government might be sending writers into Hollywood with, I guess what you would say is knowledge of ancient history and recreating it on the big screen. And George Lucas and possibly Gene Roddenberry was probably two of those writers they sent out, and it's to get the public and the world to adapt to what is seen on the big screen, you know. Hence, you got the Iapetus that's looks like the Death Star. you got this head on the moon, which you've done a show about, you know, plenty of times,
mm-hmm.
or at least a couple times, you know, with this robot head, and it looks like...
Well, as a matter of fact, we had Richard Hoagland on doing that show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I just... It seems very fascinating, you know, that maybe a lot of that, you know, that you see in Star Wars and Star Trek might actually have occurred in the past, you know, ancient past, and I was wondering what Ted thinks about that.
Well, it's entirely possible. In fact, several years back on a documentary, there was a Hollywood marketing guy, and he did say that the government approves a lot of scripts and even tells them and sometimes funds them through front companies to make certain films. So what you're saying fits right in with known testimony. And by the way, do you know where Roddenberry was when he got the idea to create the Star Trek series?
No.
He was a pilot in the U.S. Air Force, and he was sitting in a cafe in hot, steamy Bombay, India, on leave when he got the idea for the series.
Hmm.
This is according to his own testimony.
Hmm.
So, he was in the Air Force.
Cool. Hi, Mike. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And the telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 623-444-5889. Or toll-free, 888-223-4599. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Jerry. I'm calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Jerry.
I'm listening with great interest to all of this. I really like what Ted has to say and his concept of the craters and so forth. And some of the information about what's at the moon, you know, in or on, and it reminded me of a book that I read. It's a rare book. I think it's pretty hard to find. It's called Penetration by Ingo Swann, and this deals with Ingo working eventually with some alphabet agency to use his to use his ability to take a look to see what's going on the moon.
Okay, Jerry, hang on. We have to take a break. And as soon as this break is over, we'll be back with Ted Tweetmeyer and Jerry from Phoenix. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Ted Tweetmeyer, and we have on the line not only Ted Tweetmeyer, but we have Jerry from Phoenix. So, Jerry, we had to cut you off in the middle of a sentence, so the mic is yours, sir.
Oh, that's fine, Kevin. I was just saying that this book by Ingo Swann, Penetration, is it's a rare book. It's very costly to get. But it's quite intriguing, and it tells quite a story about what Ingo Swann experienced by projecting himself to the moon and then taking a look around. For those who aren't aware, Ingo Swann is probably one of the most gifted psychics of our age. Do you know anything about this, Ted?
I do know he started the remote viewing program. I do know something about Ingo Swann. He was the initial trainer of the NSA personnel that were taught how to do it. Can you tell us a little bit about what he found on the moon?
Well, from what I've read in this book, he discovered that there are a series of factories up there where extraterrestrials are doing something. He wasn't sure what they were doing. They became aware that he was there looking at them, and the next thing that you know, he's being called out to go to different places, in North America, Alaska being one of them, and it was because these guys were now looking for him. and they were taking a look to see who he is. And it caused a real problem for their surveillance program, because once they knew that they were being watched, they used their abilities and turned around and started watching the people here, and it apparently caused quite a mess. But he saw some very sophisticated places up there, some that were below ground, some that were above ground, and he reported back that they were quite vast, you know, large places. And they were living there, doing something there, and I'm not really clear on what they were doing.
Well, there's things like, I believe it's tritium-3, helium-3, I can't remember the
Yeah, helium-3 for sure.
Yeah, helium-3.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are some things on the moon that are not really on Earth in any real quantity, so that might be what they're using, along with titanium and a few other things.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
But anyways, it's really fascinating, and thank you for bringing the information forward, Ted. It's interesting listening to this, so thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that with us. That's really interesting. It provides more additional confirmation on what we figure we knew already, so it's great. Thank you.
You know, it's very interesting. I used to have that book electronic. Someone sent it to me electronically. It was an e-book. And I lost it in a computer crash. But to buy a copy of that book is well over $300 if you can find it.
Wow.
So, but it's, yeah, there's some fascinating stuff in it. Okay, the telephone lines are open. 623-444-5889 is the main number. It will work from anywhere on planet Earth, even probably from Nibiru. But if you don't want to make a long-distance call because you live outside of the USA and outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message by going to kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, click the link that says flash message. It will come to me, all right? If you need to call me on the toll-free number, you may do so. It is 888-223-4599. Now, we have a flash message from Australia. This, actually, it came in quite a few minutes ago. But this is from Blue in Australia. Good day, Mr. Kevin Smith. How are you and enjoying your latest show? Hi, Ted. Do you think there is a secret space fleet? Furthermore, what is your take on the disclosure happening in November? I rather think it's like Kevin suggests, it happening already, don't you think? So go ahead and respond to that, and caller, if you'll hang on, we'll get to you next.
Well, we certainly have a secret fleet. There's absolutely no question about that. That's where a lot of that billions and billions of black dollars goes into funding that, because it is pretty expensive technology to manufacture. But of course, it's like anything else, in the wrong hands, it's not good, you know. But
well, what do you think about everybody's talking about disclosure is going to happen in November, and what I've said is disclosure's been happening all along. They've been putting the evidence out. They say one thing, but then they put the evidence out where you can find it.
Yeah, it's been going on for a number of years, decades perhaps. I first read about it, back in the early 80s, I read a magazine article about controlled disclosure to slowly get people ready for the truth. And, just like you're saying, you're seeing all these things happening, and the Vatican admitting to things that they wouldn't admit to before, to do with contacts with alien races. And so, yeah, they're trying to gear people up for the shock and awe, so to speak, of the whole thing. But it will raise questions, and I often wonder, because I've heard this before, that they were going to disclose it all, but then it didn't happen. This is probably 10 years ago. And because it creates a problem, because the automatic question is, how are you going to secure our skies and stop the abduction problem? Then the answer is, they can't.
Right.
They can't do it.
That's correct.
They can't do it. So that creates a problem. And I think that's probably one of the obstacles that's going to prevent it from just outright being telling the whole truth. And all these disclosures in these other countries are all really, really well sanitized. Lights in the sky and all this kind of thing. You know, essentially watered down and turned into meaningless material. Because the intelligence community will sift through it all before anyone else gets to see it. That's a given, you know.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. Well, am I correct that, Ted, did you work for NASA or just an engineer for a certain company that worked for NASA?
I've worked for companies and owned my own company and did many, many contracts for them and have been in pretty much every one of their facilities.
So. Okay, because I was kind of wondering, I mean, you know, you could talk about how everything's departmentalized and, you know, and they can keep secrets and stuff. But, I mean, like yourself, I mean, there's many smart people out there. I mean, there's got to be all kinds of eyeballs rolling, you know what I mean? Is it really the scare tactic? I know you mentioned that you didn't want anything to do with knowing X
with
amount of stuff. And so I just kind of wondering, you know, aren't these people going to finally get sick of this, you know? And if you would band together and say, hey, you know, this is all, you know, a joke, and you know, all this stuff's going together, you know, and if you're going to kill us, you're going to kill us all, you know, or whatever, you know. I mean,
well, Terry, you know, Terry, let me tell you, believe me, if all the scientists at NASA banded together and said, you know, we're going to make a disclosure here, and if you're going to kill us, you're going to have to kill us all. Believe me, those who want to kill them, it will not stop them. The number doesn't matter.
That's right. There are things that Kevin can't talk about, and I can't talk about. You know, certain things you talk about, and your number's going to get punched, you know? And so I don't cross the line.
Yeah. I just would hope someday, you know, I mean, like I say, you know, you say they could kill a lot of people. You know, they can't kill everybody. You know?
Yeah, they can. Yes, they can.
Some people will get tired of it, you know. I think that's why they're trying to get rid of NASA's, because I think it's their biggest liability.
Terry, let me tell you, first, what I'm about to say does not imply that I think they will do it. But let me tell you, if the government, our authorized portions of it, decided they were going to wipe out all but three people in the United States, do not think they don't have the ability to do it, and do not think there are people that would do it. I mean, don't think there are no people that would do it. There are.
Yeah.
There are people that would do it, and the technology exists.
I believe that, too. Yeah.
There's an ongoing list that's been kept of the number of biowarfare scientists that have been killed in strange accidents, and right now it's over 40.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them have worked on advanced radar technology and other weaponry for Marconi and others. Here's an example, okay? One guy's car was found on a bridge, the door open and the engine running, and he was never found. Never left a note either. And he was known to be a very mentally well-balanced, stable individual who worked on some deep projects. Another guy was a bio-warfare scientist. He somehow got trapped in a in an airlock between the doors, between the hall and the lab. They have an airlock. And somehow the doors were locked, and that particular compartment filled with nitrogen. So he suffocated. You know, and they rule these things accidents and suicides and, you know, and all this kind of thing, which are outright murder. You don't even have to be a police officer to figure out some of this stuff. And, you know, so they arrange these things, and they get away with it. Okay, they really do get away with it. And some of them are just absolutely ludicrous, you know?
Well, and so long as there is protective wall around them that is spread basically on the basis of an executive order issued by Truman. So long as that's there, they will get away with it. But I've said, Ted, over and over, when people start saying that, boy, there's just no way to bring this secrecy down, yes, there is. It's all predicated on an executive order. And an executive order by one executive can be nullified by another. In other words, an executive order means it's a declaration by a president. And it's a written order. It has a number, and it comes from the president. Okay? Now, those have the rule of law. They have the power of law on all federal agencies and employees. And then many of the contractors, when they sign on to a program, sign an agreement that makes them subject to those executive orders having to do with that project.
In fact, at the high-level projects, it actually has a statement, I can tell you, that you sign, and it says if you violate the terms of secrecy as outlined in this agreement, that we have a right to terminate your contract with extreme prejudice. That only means one thing.
Mm-hmm. It does. And so, but see, these executive orders, the executive order that started all this, could be nullified with one executive order from the president right now. It could happen as we speak. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this with more of your calls and comments. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Ted Tweetmeyer. You know, Ted, we were talking about the fact that this secrecy was all started with an executive order, and there have been many additional executive orders since then, I am sure, that have to do with this. One single executive order can nullify the protection of secrecy on this subject. Just an executive order in a few minutes, and bam, the wall comes down. There are people that disagree with me on that. I'd like to get your thoughts on it. What do you think?
I think the issues are the impact on society is going to be the issue that could stop it. And you know, if you drop the curtain, you know, this is the equivalent to taking the genie out of the bottle. You can't stuff it back in there once you take it out. And I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you, of course. I'm just saying that I think this is the reason why that all these years have passed, despite endless testimony, the work of Greer and many others, and that why still the lid is still on it in this country, because we are the ones that are developing technology that functions, at least from the viewpoint of the observer on the ground, like that of alien technology. And it will raise a lot of embarrassing questions that probably nobody's going to want to answer.
Yeah, but the point is, look, let me use this as an example. Here in the United States, there were rumors that there was this place called Area 51. And the government said, nothing there. Doesn't exist. We don't know what you're talking about. And then the first photographs that we got of Area 51 were satellite photographs taken by a Russian satellite. All right, now, they already knew. They were taking pictures of it with their satellite. They already knew. So I use that as an example. All this technology that me and Joe on the corner and Susan down the street just kind of imagine exists, you can bet that all the other intelligence agencies in all the other developed countries know that that technology already exists and that the U.S. is using it.
Uh-huh.
All right, so it's only a secret from us. It's not a secret to the others. It's just a secret from us. And so I don't, you know, I think there are countries in which there will be tremendous upheavals. And they are countries that would disagree with my assessment that they are culturally backward. But that's my assessment. And there would be some upheaval there. But in developed countries, I don't think there's going to be any upheaval. You know, you mentioned this report. It's actually the Brookings Institute, I think, is what you're referring to, isn't it? The Brookings Report?
It is Brookings. I'm sorry. Yeah. I said RAN by mistake. You're right. It is Brookings.
One of the things that gets pointed out often is the upheavals it would cause in religion. And yet that report focuses on the greatest upheaval would be among the scientists. And they expect that there would be many suicides.
Mm-hmm.
So the folks that would be the most upset, whose apple carts would be the most dumped, would be the scientists. And that doesn't surprise me, because I tend to refer to establishment science as intellectual mudsuckers. They've been wrong about almost everything all the way down through history. So it would upset their apple cart. These guys that say, well, you know, the conditions on Venus are just way too inhospitable. There could not be life there. Nonsense. There could be.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, everybody thought there couldn't be any life at the bottom of the ocean. There couldn't be any life where the water is over 400 degrees around the volcanic vents on the ocean floor, but there is. I mean, you know, it's...
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the average temperature coming out of those vents is 795 degrees.
Yeah, it's superheated water.
Yeah.
Yeah, superheated.
And there's plenty of life around those vents. And
they've even found bacteria that live at high temperatures too, that we never thought was possible.
Yeah, and at low temperature that we never thought was possible.
Mm-hmm.
And they've discovered anaerobes that live right here on this planet, but if you expose them to oxygen, they die.
And then there's the prions, most people know, that creates mad cow or Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. And the prions have been found to survive the temperatures of an autoclave. In fact, even higher, to over to 1,000 degrees, they can survive, and a vacuum. So they can easily come in on an asteroid or a meteor.
And who knows, maybe they did.
In fact, I've often wondered, you know, could Mars be just full of them? You know, we don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a sophisticated test for that microscopic protein, and... who knows? Mars could be a huge death track.
For us, may be. All right, let's take our final call of the evening. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening. Bill from Elgin, Illinois.
Hey, Bill.
Hello, Bill.
Hey, Kevin. I just wonder, once we know, if maybe part of the reason we don't know more than we do, people who do know almost wish they didn't. That and one final thing, I would like to know, and hopefully if this ever comes out, I will know exactly how much the Vatican knows. Why do they want an observatory in our country? And it's just such an interesting topic, and there's it's like an octopus. Its tentacles go out, you know, in all directions, and there's so many different directions we could take on this. We could probably all go on for another couple hours. Good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, very good thoughts. What about that, Ted? He said it's almost like the more we know, maybe we don't want to know, and the people who do know, maybe they wish they didn't.
Well, there's things I've learned that sometimes I've looked back and wish maybe I didn't learn them. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it will change, it will absolutely permanently change everyone's viewpoint of what we think culture and life on Earth is. When you find out the truth, when you realize there are races, and as Kevin knows, I've had contact with some of this stuff, that these things are worse than anything you can imagine. You know, it's like, take your worst nightmare and it's worse than that kind of a thing. And so maybe we don't want to know. And to some of them, we are nothing more than a slab of meat. And, you know, all these things change our perception of life. The naive, simple view that here we live in our little sphere, whirling at about 1,000 miles per hour on the surface, not even feeling it, you know, buzzing around the sun with no one bothering us, that will all change. And our viewpoint of just looking in the night sky won't even be the same, or looking at the moon. You know, when you've been through this, you realize you can't go back. You know, like the little child has been told the truth about Santa Claus.
Well, that's true. And, you know, I think about us and squid. Now, up here in our realm, we catch these squid, you know, and they're up to, you know, 3, 4, 5 feet long. Those are big ones. And, you know, and we eat them. But if you get into the realm of the squid, you get off the land and get into the realm of the squid, there are squid that can eat you.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are 20, 25 feet long or more.
Yeah. Giant squid. And they can, and this is verified, and they can eat you. So, maybe we are something like the squid to other races. Ted, stay on the line with me. Folks, I'm glad that you were here tonight, and I hope you were too. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.